You're listening to a 95BFM podcast.
To begin, can you tell us about the Green Party's reaction to the government's withdrawal from the Beyond Oil and Gas Alliance?
It's embarrassing for our country and an admission that this isn't a government that is taking our climate commitments seriously. I mean, the reintroduction of offshore gas and oil exploration speaks volumes to the government's plans to not tackle the climate crisis, but actually not even modernize our economy to one that runs on clean energy and actually has investment and much more productive, and actually even within the government's own framework, probably profitable sectors that they could be investing in.
Do you think that this withdrawal could have an impact on New Zealand's international reputation, especially with other members of the alliance?
Absolutely. I mean, New Zealand brands itself as being a clean, green country that serves a purpose, for example, when it comes to attracting tourists. But beyond all, it reflects a dangerous turn for many Western countries into using climate denialist rhetoric to push agendas that actually will leave many low-income communities worse off, because we've got to remember that it is everyday working people that pay the highest price of not addressing the climate crisis. And we're already seeing how, for example, in Australia, they're being hit time and time again by extreme weather events that used to be deemed as once in a 100-year type events, and now they're becoming frequent.
Additionally, how do you expect the withdrawal to impact our relationship with our neighbours in the Pacific?
Well, I think it once again undermines our ability to form diplomatic relationships based on respect and trust. Pacific Island nations whose livelihoods are literally at risk expect us to take the climate crisis seriously, because it is their livelihoods and their survival that it is being put at risk by people in positions of power neglecting addressing the climate crisis.
Simon Watts has said that the government was still committed to meeting New Zealand's climate targets and that natural gas exploration would be needed for New Zealand's energy transition until viable alternatives came into place. How would you respond to that?
Just that he's lying, and it's just simply not true. The government cannot be both reinstating offshore gas and oil exploration, mining for things like coal, and claiming that a few investments here and there on renewable energy will make up for it. The reality is that we do need far more renewable energy. We need, for example, to invest in cleaner transport options such as rail, and the government isn't doing any of that. So I don't know if he's taking voters for fools, but he's just simply not correct when he says that.
And the withdrawal from this alliance was revealed a day after the Greens found that the government's investment into new gas fields violated our free trade agreements. How will the Greens challenge the government's oil and gas exploration policies?
As we have done so throughout this term, which is ensuring that we hold the Prime Minister to account in the House, but actually that we send a clear message to voters that we will turn back the move from this government to basically ignore the science, ignore the evidence, and we'll reinstate the ban on offshore gas and oil exploration, invest in things like rail and renewables so that we can have an economy that actually serves everyone, not just the mining and oil company CEOs.
All right, moving on to the next topic. Immigration Minister Erica Stanford recently announced that the government was looking to electronically monitor some asylum seekers and migrants in preparation for the mass arrivals of asylum seekers by plane. The Immigration, Fiscal Sustainability and System Integrity Amendment Bill, which is introducing this measure, is based on a series of recommendations from a review by Victoria Casey, which concluded that long-term detention of refugee claimants in correction facilities was inhumane. So my next question is, what is the Green Party's position on the amendments to our immigration laws, particularly the electronic monitoring of asylum seekers?
Yeah, I'm going to call BS on the framing by the government that this is following recommendations by the Casey report, because the reality is the previous Labour government introduced this mass arrival legislation which allowed for detention of asylum seekers arriving by planes or by boats. This was supported by the National Party, and it's a shameful track record by the Labour Party to basically push a bill that was opposed by basically every human rights organization in the country. The monitoring of asylum seekers is a restriction on their rights. To detain them is a political choice, and so is to electronically monitor them. It's important to note that asylum seekers in this country are not being adequately supported. When we talk about people that are escaping some of the most horrible forms of persecution, so we are opposing this bill and condemn both the Labour Party for enabling the conditions for this to happen and the National Party for pushing forward with this rights undermining bill.
Is electronic monitoring a better alternative to long-term detention?
Yeah, well, the point is that we should not need long-term detention. It's not needed. The politicians have basically lied to us to create a scenario where they're now presenting these two false binaries that they're telling us it's either long-term detention or electronic monitoring. When so what we could do is, for example, better resource, for example, you know, organizations like Community Law that ends up being supporting many of the asylum seeking claims, organizations like the Asylum Seeker Support Trust and many others who actually end up making those asylum seeking claims processes a lot faster, taking away the need for tactics such as monitoring or even detention as claimed by this government.
How should the government assess asylum seekers who pose potential security risks?
The first thing here is that no government has been able to substantiate to the public the real supposedly claimed risk that we're about to be having the so-called mass arrivals by boat and by plane. It's a term that's been used by governments time and time again. And the idea that asylum seekers overall could pose a threat is a lie. The biggest terrorist attack that we had in this country did not come from an asylum seeker. It came from a white supremacist. And so the idea that asylum seekers inherently pose a national security threat ignores the fact of where the violence has predominantly come from in this country, which is not via asylum seekers.
The bill introducing this measure also introduces new rules for dawn raids, where a judge would decide whether Immigration New Zealand could make out-of-hours visits to the homes of those suspected of breaching their visas. Can you tell us about the potential implications that might come from this as well?
Out-of-hour visits are simply not needed. The reality is that for far too long, Immigration New Zealand has used intimidatory tactics, whether it is to threaten out-of-hour visits or simply to have compliance officers bully people into leaving. And so what we would do instead is just remove the need for out-of-hour visits altogether rather than passing this on to the judiciary. I think there is far more we can do to strengthen the rights of people who currently don't have a visa because of a failure in the system. And I don't think this bill overall helps to do that, particularly when it undermines the rights of asylum seekers alongside it.
All right, moving on to the last topic. In the past few days, Justice Minister Paul Goldsmith has introduced a number of sentencing reforms, among which are capping the discounts judges can give to offenders, especially on the basis of young age and remorse, as well as higher penalties for people assaulting first responders and treating one-punch attacks as separate offenses. So my next question is, what is the Green Party's take on Paul Goldsmith's recent sentencing reforms?
What we know these reforms will do is massively increase the prison population. What we know is that then the taxpayers will be forking out billions of dollars and maintaining expensive prisons that do very little to actually end and reduce violence in our communities because prisons do not rehabilitate people. The problem that we have is that when people are committing crimes, the last thing they're often thinking about are the consequences and the sentencing. I would say most politicians probably don't even know, for example, if you brought a case study, how much time in prison they would get. So this does not address where crime comes from. For example, another reform that was announced was around increasing penalties for shoplifting. I would say most people shoplifting would probably be more thinking about their own survival and the family's survival, especially if they're shoplifting from a supermarket, rather than, or for example, have underlying mental health issues that need addressed, rather than thinking, oh, what's the sentence I'm going to get because of doing this desperate and probably not rational action.
So just to reiterate, will harsher sentencing for violent crimes, such as one-punch attacks, have any impact on violent offences?
We don't believe it will actually reduce violence in our communities. What it will do is put a really heavy bill on taxpayers due to the increased prison population, ruin people's lives, and actually just entrench the cycle of violence and incarceration. So this actually does not go any way towards addressing violence in our communities.
And lastly, what sentencing or judicial reforms would a Greens-led government introduce to keep our streets safer?
For example, when it comes to issues like shoplifting, which the government has focused a lot this week, we would address issues like inequality and poverty. We also think that people deserve better access to things like legal aid. And we also need better city planning and infrastructure to, for example, have cities that are inherently safer and better designed so that we don't have the kind of spaces that end up creating violence in our community. Finally, I want to say that the government's lack of adequate commitment to addressing and supporting Te Arere Kura, the plan to end family and sexual violence, speaks volumes. They could actually be better resourcing the organizations that help work closely with families to prevent violence in our communities.
That was a 95BFM podcast. To hear more, head to 95BFM.com/bcasts.